It is. Francis, you were the one who wanted this new system. See what a lot of great trouble it has been. I won't say too much more, actually, now that I have this microphone here even, because you've all received the notice of our speaker today. I wish to point out two things only at this point. There is no ban on disseminating anything you hear here today, despite the fact that it's, you're listening to a privacy commissioner. You may repeat everything he says. He takes no objection. And secondly, although we have over here many mentions of government and what roles Mr. Chang spent previously in government, he is not officially a member of the government in his role as privacy commissioner. We always want to make that distinct. There is a definite independence here, which I'm sure you wish to maintain. But I'm here to learn, and I shan't take too much of your time anymore. Our privacy commissioner for personal data, Mr. Alan Chang. You'll have to hold this microphone, I'm afraid.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you have a nice lunch and enjoying your coffee now. So my topic is pretty serious. I hope it won't bore you too much. But the fact that you turn up for this occasion means you must be somehow interested in the topic of today, and that is expanded sharing of consumer credit data. Where do you draw the line? Just in case you have no idea, absolutely no idea of what this subject is, I need to talk a little bit about what consumer credit data is. If you apply for a credit card, you make an application, so your name, ID card number, financial status, marital status, now this will become part of your consumer credit data. Your credit limit, how much you spend every month, you know, that will be accumulated. And we have a system whereby there is a central credit reference agency which exchanges, collects, and gives away information to and from credit providers in Hong Kong to ensure that the credit providers have as comprehensive as possible a set of consumer credit data about individuals. So this is how it works. If you look at the diagram, if you apply for credit, you provide information, and that is being stored by the credit provider, and the credit provider will provide this to the credit reference agency. So next time, if you turn up and apply for different credit facilities to be provided by another credit provider, then that second credit provider could gain access to information already stored in by the credit reference agency. And if you have a second transaction about credit applications, these new data will be additionally stored by the central credit reference agency. That's how it works, basically. So the situation before and after 1st of April this year, this table illustrates this point. Before this date, the credit reference agency is already exchanging credit reference data with the credit providers on a number of consumer credit data, and that includes credit data with respect to credit cards and other unsecured credit facilities. As far as secure credit facilities is concerned, i.e. mortgages, before 1st of April, they are already sharing negative mortgage data. And what is negative mortgage data? So we need to make a distinction between positive data and negative data. But by negative data means that when you are in default of a payment, then the relevant data will become negative data. So for example, what is the period overdue? What is the amount involved in the default? That sort of data will become negative data. But if you are not in default of the repayments, then those relevant information, i.e. your credit exposure and all that, is actually your positive credit data. Nothing to do whatever with default in payment. So beginning 1st of April this year, additional mortgage data have commenced to be shared, and that includes positive data for residential mortgages, as well as positive and negative data for non-residential mortgages. All the three blue boxes referred to in this chart. Now, the idea of including these additional mortgage data comes from the financial services industry. They would like to have more data so that they could do the credit assessment more reliably, so that they can know more about the customers in terms of approving or rejecting mortgage loan applications. This proposal has the full support of the Hong Kong Monetary Authority. Now, consumer credit data, I'm sure you agree, are very private and personal information. Mortgage data similarly, or particularly, are very personal because the amount involved is big. So from a data protection perspective, more disclosure and use of personal data is actually like more or greater privacy intrusion. And serious consequences to the consumers may arise through the mishandling of this sort of credit information. As the Privacy Commissioner responsible for the protection of personal data, how did I determine whether or not and how to permit the expanded sharing of these data as proposed by the financial services industry? Among other things I did, I launched a public consultation which lasted for 5 weeks. So I collected a lot of expressions of views from various sectors of the committee, including legislative councillors, district councillors, political parties, academics, members of the legal profession, consumer and privacy advocates, professional bodies, associations, and many, many others. I have received 56 written submissions, and I have also conducted face-to-face interviews with 877 randomly selected household representatives using a structured questionnaire. Now, there are many justifications for the proposal raised by the financial services industry, and one is that as a result of more sharing of additional mortgage data, they will be able to do the credit assessment more reliably. As a result, they will be able to differentiate between people with better creditworthiness as against people who are speculators, who may be over leveraging when they apply for mortgage loans. So the former group of people will represent the majority of the consumers applying for mortgage loans, and in those cases, they will be able to offer better terms and interest rates. So that's one benefit that the financial services industry said they will be able to provide to justify the proposal. And as you can see from this chart, more than half of the household interviewees agreed that this indeed could be the case. And the banks also provided some historical evidence to support their proposed benefit. They're talking about what happened after year 2003, because in that particular year, we allowed more credit data sharing. Beginning that year, 2003, we allow for positive data for unsecure credit facilities to be shared. We also allowed negative mortgage data to be shared beginning that year. And as a result, as the banks pointed out, the delinquency rates, the bad debts position has improved. You will still remember, I guess, 2003 was a bad year for Hong Kong. It's a lot of delinquencies, a lot of bad debts, financial crisis and all that. So in that particular year, we have relaxed in a way that we allow more consumer credit data sharing. And the banks have now quoted evidence saying that since that opening up of data sharing, the situation in terms of bad debts and all that have improved. Now, there are people who argue against these arguments, and to start with, they would say, you know, the evidence pointed out by the banks may not be relevant because after 2003, the Hong Kong economy has actually picked up, and the improvement in the delinquency rates was probably due more to the economic recovery than the opening up of more data sharing. And we have been talking to a lot of stakeholders, including the banks, of course, and we have been asking a lot of questions, but we noticed that none of the banks have committed that as a result of more mortgage data sharing, they would be able to actually offer better terms and interest rates. So what the industry has proposed could really be academic arguments because there's no pledge from the banks as such. There is no guarantee that the benefits that go to the bank will be passed on to the consumers. So as a result, I make the conclusion that the banks themselves have not really made out a very convincing case. There is no commitment they could be arguing academically. Now, what about the other justifications proposed by the banks? They say that with more mortgage data being shared, they will be able to do their job of credit assessment more reliably, and as a result, this will promote responsible lending and prudent borrowing. There are very few arguments against this proposition, I must say. The only view I receive are very extreme view, and they say that if the credit providers can actually get the information directly from the borrowers applying for credit applications or applying for mortgage loans, why is the need to have the data shared in the first place? This is a very fundamental question, I must say. If we assume that every credit applicant is honest and will provide whatever information in his possession, whether in support or against his own application, that indeed really would not support any central credit reference agency. There is no need for any sharing in the first place, not to mention the need for expanded sharing. But the fact is, on a global basis, in the developed economies anyway, credit reference agency is a norm. So in US, Canada, Australia, Singapore, any developed economy you name, you find this credit reference agency operating, providing services to the credit providers. So in a way, Hong Kong is just following the globally accepted practice. In a way, we are saying to ourselves, we really do not think everyone will be 100% honest in their applications for credit. Somehow we need a system to ensure we'll be able to check the data received from the credit applicants. Number more importantly, through responsible lending and borrowing, the financial services industry have said that this would mitigate against the risk of a property bubble forming and bursting. And as a result, this would maintain the banking and financial stability in Hong Kong. Now, these are very important arguments in the area of wider public interest. We have many arguments put forward by the banks and the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, but and what about the general public will? You also have a pretty strong public support for this sort of proposition, as you can see from this chart. But at the same time, you also have people... No, go back a little bit. Still talking about people supporting this will. People would say it would facilitate better management of credit risk. So far, the delinquency rates are not that bad, but that is because at the moment, interest rates are very low, historically low. And the more likely thing that will happen in the immediate or medium future will be interest rate will go up. And what will happen if interest rate go up? So this diagram will show you the burden that will be placed on a borrower. Suppose the present interest rate is 1%. So for this particular borrower, the debt-to-income ratio will be 50%. We're talking about a particular situation, but just for the purpose of illustrating what happens, if interest rates rises by 2%, from 1% to 3%, the debt-to-income ratio would immediately increase to 60%, and if interest rates further increases by 2%, this 60% debt-to-income ratio will become 72%. And that could be a very great burden to people earning a fixed income and paying increasing interest rates in respect of his or her mortgage loan. Now, again, people arguing for the industry proposal has quoted that since 2003, as a result of more consumer credit sharing, the delinquency rates and all that have improved. They again pull up all these arguments. But what about people speaking against this proposition? They would say, I'm now repeating what I've just said, you know, the experience does not really illustrate a direct causal relationship between more sharing and improved delinquency rates. It's got more to do with improved economic situation in Hong Kong and other favorable factors. They also pointed out that there are many other measures to control risks associated with increased property prices. What about, for example, limiting the proportion of bank deposit that could be used for mortgage loans? And what about setting the upper limit of the mortgage loan margin? So really, stabilizing the property markets, according to them, is a pretext to shift the responsibility of credit risk assessment from the banks to the consumers and leading to invasion of privacy. Now, of course, you know, the long-term stability of the property market depends on government land supply and housing policies. And in many cases of speculation, the speculators themselves are very cash rich. They do not really need to rely on mortgage loan payments to undertake the relevant transactions. And there is also the additional arguments against the bank's proposition. People say, unlike unsecured credit, mortgage loans are secure by the value of the property themselves. So the risk exposure is not that great after all. And even if you are not able to sell the properties in the cases of delinquency, you can still earn a rental income from these properties. So really, there's no real big risks, and the banks have been painting not a really realistic picture. That's what these people say. And the Hong Kong Monetary Authority immediately argued back, saying, well, this is not how the banking industry should be operating. They are not in the industry of property holding, right? Actually, according to the banking ordinance, the maximum that they can hold in terms of land is 25%. So the banks should be looking for good mortgage loan applicants, people who can repay the loan, not people who will default, and then you hope that the property will sell, and you hope the property will attract income. That's not the way banks should be operating. And in the event that the property prices go down, accompanied by increased in interest rates, a domino effect could be generated. If a lot of people are selling properties, then the property prices will go down drastically, and people could panic. So the risks of a property bubble forming and bursting as a result could be disastrous in terms of maintaining the stability of the banking and financial service sector in Hong Kong is concerned. Now, what is my conclusion? Well, I think I appreciate very much that there are many factors which affect the local property markets and the stabilization of the Hong Kong banking system. This includes, for example, the administration land, fiscal and monetary policies, and the Hong Kong Monetary Authority's exercise of regulatory powers, credit providers' risk management discipline, as well as the global economic factors beyond Hong Kong's control. So it would be very difficult indeed to ascertain the exact contribution that responsible borrowing and lending would make to stabilizing the property market or the financial services sector. There's a lot of uncertainty, yes. But there is actually no major disagreement from the respondents during the public consultation exercise that responsible borrowing and lending is indeed one contributing factor to stabilizing the property market and the financial services sector. The direct causal relationship cannot be proved, but the contribution must be there. There is no disagreement on this point. Whether the contribution is big or large or small, no, it is very difficult to ascertain, but the contribution must be there. So on that basis, I concluded that responsible borrowing and lending is conducive to stabilizing the property market and the banking sector. Now, having come to these views and conclusions, my immediate task is to go down to the nitty-gritties of the regulation of how much data should be shared and how it should be shared. So there's one overriding privacy issue I have to tackle immediately, and that is, despite all these benefits, or in view of all these benefits that the banks have proposed, and some of which I disagree, some of which I agree, whether the sharing of the data is necessary and not excessive for credit risk assessment. That's the question I need to answer under the Personal Data Privacy Ordinance in order to say yes or no to the bank's proposals. Now, people who say no, the arguments are pretty strong because they say, well, there's really no evidence to prove a lot of the things required to say there's a positive case. For example, it's common, yes, in other jurisdictions that both positive and negative market data are being shared, but do these jurisdictions can demonstrate in the light of their operating experience that sharing of positive data indeed will lead to lower default rates? Do they have statistical evidence to prove that? Do you have evidence to say that the borrowers are indeed not very truthful in providing the required mortgage data? If they are being honest, then they would provide the information when they apply for the loans. There's no need for a central data sharing system to include additional mortgage data to be set up. Do you have evidence that people are now buying more in the non-residential property area? Do you have evidence that indeed in the non-residential mortgage loan area there is an unacceptable delinquency rate? So they are asking for facts, evidence, and all that. So what's my conclusion? First of all, well, bravely, I must say, I think there is really not right to insist that you need to have real evidence before you come to a view on a privacy point here. I think I have to adopt an anticipatory approach rather than a remedial approach. Well, that remedial approach was taken in the year 2003. As I pointed out earlier, in that year, there was a lot of delinquency rates, there was a lot of bad debts, and only after those things had happened that my office decided to open up sharing of more consumer credit data. So that I would call a remedial approach. Now, in the present case, we're talking about mortgage loans, and mortgage loans represent 40% of the consumer lending market in Hong Kong. And in terms of banking lending, then you can see it's really a very important component of its lending portfolio. And for individual consumers, that is probably the biggest investment during his lifetime. So we are talking about a very serious subject. It has to be handled with care. So I prefer to take a anticipatory approach to make sure people do not overborrow, to make sure that the banking sector will be able to cope with a downward trend in terms of property prices going down or inflationary increases in interest rates. If things are out of control, and only at that time do I come in to allow more mortgage data sharing, I think that would be too late. Well, in coming to this will of mine, of course, I have looked at also the responses from the general public, and those household interviews did indicate to me that more than half of the general public do support expanded sharing. They do buy the idea that that will help better credit risk assessment and help to stabilize the property market and the financial service sector. And I also make reference to what's happening in other jurisdictions. And I noted that in USA, UK, Canada, all these developed economies are sharing both positive and negative data for residential as well as non-residential mortgages. In Australia, they are only sharing negative mortgage data. But in January 2011, there is already a draft built, drafted, which will enable the government to share positive mortgage data next year. So in a way, my determination is following the practices adopted by other jurisdictions facing similar problems or issues. Just wonder how much time I have. I do not have much. I think I've already completed talking about the major overriding privacy issue that is under this topic. I have other, not met that major, which I call subsidiary privacy issues, but in the interest of time, I don't think I can go through them. So I just think I'll stop here and open up for people's questions. But before I do that, I must say some concluding or final remarks. Although I have not been able to cover all the privacy issues in more, but I must say that this has not been easy exercise because I need to balance in individuals' privacy interests against other interests and the wider public and social interests of the community. My role is to protect personal data. But at the same time, under the law, privacy right is not absolute. You have to be balanced against other rights. And under the law, there are terms like necessary, non-excessive, reasonably practicable, in the circumstances, which highlight that I really have to make determinations in a gray area. But I think from a data protection perspective, I have done my very best to preserve privacy interest. But at the end of the day, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. It's up to you to decide whether I have fulfilled that obligation. So the floor is open.
We have immediate questions for you. Susan.
It's actually not a question. I actually came to this lunch to try to persuade the commissioner to change his mind. Because, I wasn't told at this lunch what sort of people he polled or he surveyed in reaching his conclusion. That's number one. I presume he did not poll carpet beggars like me who will welcome a market collapse, a collapse of the property market. That's just a joke, by the way. I accept that you are a good champion of the banks in that it would definitely, if your proposal wins wide support in Hong Kong, it would benefit the banks to a large extent. The question is whether you have considered whether it benefits people like us. Now, how will the bank guarantee the protection of such data not falling into the wrong hands, as in the case of the MTRC, and how will they assure that any changes to the data will be updated quickly enough? And also, would you not agree with me that it will, once the changes take place and they are automatically entitled to have this data, they will not start treating us not so well? Because I'm very much in favor of personal banking, which more or less has disappeared, and in its place...
Susan, it's hardly fair to put that many questions all in one go, unless you sit about.
These are not questions. These are comments in a hope to persuade him to change his mind. Because, you know, I really miss personal banking. Now the only banking I can have is Premier, and even that, not very personal. Once we give all our data to them, they won't talk to you at all. So what is wrong with our present system where I can sit in a room with my banker, and then if the banker says to me, Susan, if you sign this piece of paper, then I can circulate to all the banks, I can give you 1% less. I mean, that's the beauty of it. That's what I want to preserve. So I hope by my comments I can persuade you to change your mind. Thank you.
First of all, the proposal has been implemented effective 1st of April. So, of course, you know, this is not law. We are always open to opinion, and market dynamics could always change, and we could always carry out changes in accordance with the wish of the general public and the services in the relevant services industry. But I think the problem of this session is I do not have enough time, you know, because I've only talked about the overriding privacy issue, but the details, the devils are in the details, you know. I presented the picture as if, you know, I say yes to the banks, you know. But actually, I've said a great number of no's to the banks in the details. This slide, for example, comes out, you know, what about additional mortgage data for pre-existing mortgages? Because in order to operate the system effectively, the banks need to have data in the database, in the credit reference agency. But I've actually said no, you cannot do it retrospectively. Effective 1st of April, you need to ask a customer politely, you know, and say, you know, you ask for a mortgage loan, what about in future, I provide this application, the data in this application to a central database called Credit Reference Agency. So that in future, if you apply credit facilities from another bank, that bank will be able to access the data stored in that agency. But that has to come after 1st of April. So the banks are crying, you know, well, this privacy commissioner is just too harsh. And the fact that pre-existing data cannot be placed in the central data bank immediately means that the whole idea of sharing would not be effectively carried out after many years to come, to say, because an average mortgage loan will last for 7 years, and in some cases last up to 20, 30 years. And so it's difficult. But I'm sidetracking a little bit. To illustrate the point, I have not painted the full picture for you. So maybe I've got bad impressions from people who are interested in their privacy. But to answer your question specifically, first point, sample, how did I get the sample? All that 877 households were randomly selected from a consultancy, which I appointed for doing this interview job. They are all owners of properties, right? Which includes residential properties as well as commercial or industrial properties, right? So they are pretty representative, I would say. Now, of course, I do not have 100% support from all these household interviewees. That's for sure. But I think I got a lot of support from over half of them in terms of statistics. I think I'm correct to say this. Again, you know, that the problem is I don't have enough time, because one of the issues I raised in that consultation is exactly the question that has been directed to me. What safeguards are to be provided, additional safeguards after this expanded sharing of data? People support more safeguards, and despite the objection from the banks or from that particular credit reference agency, my decision at the end of the exercise was that they need to have additional safeguards. in protecting consumer data. So if 6 months after the implementation date, they have to undertake at their own expense, independent of that survey, ensuring that the new system will be properly implemented. Already, there is a code of practice governing how the data should be protected under the system of sharing data. There's a code there already, which we compile, which we have also carried out an audit last year. The banks also will play a part to check, the Hong Kong Monetary Authority will also undertake checks on-site at the bank to ensure data are being protected. If you're concerned about marketing, for example, the code specifically prohibited marketing of the data stored in that credit reference agency by both the agency and by the banks. It's a specific provision, prohibition incorporated in that code. And all the data are stored, of course, electronically, so we have prescribed best practice ISO standards. I forgot the exact definition, but I prescribe a best practice ISO code for the running of the IT system that is associated with storage and handling of the data by that credit reference agency. So I try to do my best, and if that credit reference agency or the credit providers violate the code or violate the ordinance of the requirements under the ordinance, I would have no hesitation to pursue my legal powers to ensure they're brought back in track. That's what I can say, at the moment at least.
Oh, that gives me a chance to ask a question. I can quite well see why people in the mortgage lenders in the United States are worried about their business at the moment, but even at the worst point in 2003, our 6 months delinquency rate on mortgages was no more than a little bit over 1%. And that's a ratio that people in the United States, mortgage lenders, would love to have in the best of times. That was the worst it went in the worst of our times. There really isn't much of an issue about mortgages in Hong Kong. But where there was an issue in 2003 was in credit card lending. For a while, that was quite threatening. And there's always been a problem in lending by certain deposit-taking companies to domestic helpers, where there's constant reports of a black book operating between the credit agents or the credit extenders over there. Why do we consider mortgages so much when these two areas could be more critical?
Well, these problems surfaced in year 2003, and in response to those problems, my office expanded more sharing of unsecured credit facilities, consumer data, and also the negative mortgage data for residential properties, right? So that was, and as a result, you know, there were improvements. But people argue whether the improvements were as a result of more data sharing or due to other factors, right? You can never prove it. At this moment, the government or the Hong Kong Monetary Authority or the banks or the property sector are concerned about mortgage, because there's been rapid rise in property prices. I have some figures here. In a matter of a year or less, property prices have risen by 47%, figures quoted by the Hong Kong Monetary Authority. They are worried. They have done sensitivity analysis, stress tests, and all that. As they point out, prevailing interest rates are at a historical low level. The only thing that can happen is not for the interest rates to go down to a negative level, but to rise. And if that happens, and if the property prices do go down at the same time, the domino effect created by people defaulting mortgage repayments could be disastrous, according to Hong Kong Monetary Authority. No. Again, depending on how you look at this proposition, you may be scared, or you think, you know, they could be exaggerating the situation. But I think the consensus among a lot of people would be that somehow, more expanded sharing would help to improve the situation if things go worse. So if we are taking an anticipatory approach, that's the time to act. And for better or for worse, that's the decision I took.
Jake, can I get one from the Fed table here? Commissioner, the experience that people have had with codes in Hong Kong, for example, the code to access information, is that they're generally not worth the paper they're written on, to be blunt. Should consumers in Hong Kong have a statutory... Oh, our chairman has his phone ringing.
Aha. Turn it off.
Should consumers in Hong Kong have a statutory right to obtain information that is held by financial organizations, to challenge, to correct, to amend, to update that information, whatever it may be?
What the right already exists.
Statutory.
Or otherwise, no.
I can access anything that's held by Bank of East Asia or HSBC right now if it's held about me, and I can challenge and correct it, and my challenges and corrections will by law be shared with other financial institutions, even where that information may be sold because it's a saleable commodity.
Well, under our personal data privacy ordinance, already consumers or data subjects, you know, have the right to gain access to their personal data in the possession of the organizations or companies holding or using that already exists. And in this area of consumer credit sharing, again, in the code that our office issued, people do on a daily basis, do have the right, and they do make use of those rights to gain and to correct the data in the possession of that credit reference agencies. And in many cases, the need for this arises after you have been turned down for an application for credit, and you know something's gone wrong. And if that error arises because the banks or the credit reference agency make a mistake, then of course you don't have to pay anything for the correction of that mistake.
But there's two points. The first is, you're not told what the criteria are on which the decision was made. The banks generally don't reveal them. And secondly, we're talking about the sharing of information. Once that information has been shared or sold off in some way, the institution you correct is under no obligation necessarily to pass that along to other institutions that may be using that information.
So the question is?
The question is, should you not have a statutory right when your information is shared or sold that you can correct that information, and it will be corrected to all organizations to which it's been shared or sold, and you have the right to go to know who they are and go to them and be sure that it's been corrected?
I mean, the statute only provides parts of what you have in mind, right? So whether you should go to the extent that you have just described, it's a matter for people to judge, because now if you have a point to make in this area, and because the government right now is reviewing the personal data privacy ordinance, if you think people should have the right to the extent of actually not just correcting the records in the credit reference agency's possession, but also to the records of people who have somehow gained access or get copies of those data, then it's the time to speak out. Because, as I said, at the end of the day, it's always a balance, right? Privacy rights, how far I should go, it has to be balanced against many other factors, business operation efficiency. From my point of view, no, because I'm the privacy commissioner, I'm always for more privacy, more data protection. But whether we'll be able to achieve it depends a lot of, you know, whether people speak up, whether people enter into dialogues with relevant stakeholders like legislators, whether at the end of the day they will say yes to your suggestions, or they will go along with people who have other views. It's always a debate in the community.
I don't think we're going to resolve that debate today immediately. So I think it's about time we should call to close. I see people wanting to leave. I see people. Go ahead.
For consumer credit data, there's only one. To that company. That's right, yeah.
And there's many questions to ask about that too, but we won't answer them today.
One more thing.
Okay.
Thank you.